loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God wants us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I.
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Cube Show Sports Radio 730 103.9 The Ump live in the Southern RV Wholesale Studios, srvwholesale.com. Usually at 8 o'clock we visit with a good friend of the show, but today we're going to do it a little bit early. Let's welcome in Conrad Thompson.
Conrad Thompson.
Good morning, Conrad. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm great, guys. How are you?
Doing really well. I saw that HBO's losing some fights. ESPN struck a new deal that will give them a Manny Pacquiao fight on ABC and ESPN. How big of a deal is this for ESPN and ESPN?
Well, it's a huge deal for ESPN, but it is not a good look for Manny Pacquiao. I don't think he's had a fight that wasn't on pay-per-view in like a dozen years or something silly. I didn't really know this news until you told me right before we went on air, but I'm trying to rack my brain for the last time he had a non pay-per-view fight. And it feels like more than 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But so, yeah, this is something that we all kind of knew was happening. And you and I've talked about this for a few years. At the rate Pacquiao was spending and getting in trouble with that money, whether it was with the IRS or landlords or whatever it was, it felt like this was inevitable, and it's unfortunate because we still feel like we're on the same track. And I think, you know, a few years ago, if you would have said, hey, who's going to run out of money first, Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather, almost everyone would have picked Floyd. Meanwhile, Floyd has just put together, you know, wink, wink, the biggest fight in professional fight history, and now Manny Pacquiao is fighting on free TV.
Well, you've been saying that for years now, since I wasn't even on this station, that Pacquiao would drain his expenses first because his entourage was much bigger than Floyd's, and he was keeping more people afloat than Floyd was, spending the same kind of money on himself for the most part as Floyd. So it's intriguing to see that he's going to fight now on cable television. But also a little bit strange for boxing. I meant to ask you this. The other day, we were talking about this Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, this McGregor-Mayweather fight, and there are some things about that I want to bring up also. But Arky kind of asked me about the undercard of that fight, and I still to this day say it boggles my mind why more up-and-coming fighters that we know about, and there's not a ton of them, but why more bigger fights are not on undercards of fights like this, just to help you gain some notoriety. And I realize that you're not going to put a Deontay Wilder on this fight because you're hoping that he can generate some revenue for you on his own down the road. But, boy, if you wanted to try and build the star power of, let's just say, a Deontay Wilder, seems like this would be an excellent place to put him as the undercard of this fight.
You and I totally agree. If we were booking this, we would load it up. I would put Tyson Fury on this card. I would put Deontay Wilder on this card. I would put anybody who I thought was going to be the next big thing on the undercard, and I would let them fight tomato cans. You know, I'm not going to put on competitive fights, but I do want to use this massive audience to kind of build and make new stars with. And a lot of people who are kind of on the fringe fight fans will pick this up, and this would be an opportunity for you to kind of go against the grain. And instead of throwing a bunch of guys out there who nobody knows and don't have a lot of time invested in and hope that you can make something out of nothing, let's make a little something into something really big and give them that platform. So I'm with you, man. I would make this the WrestleMania of boxing, except I was loaded up with not really competitive matches, but let's give Deontay Wilder an opportunity to showcase his knockout ability. Let's let Tyson Fury put somebody's head in the third row.
Yeah, if they get a Mike Tyson-esque knockout, you know, 47 seconds into the fight, there are a lot of people, if they see that, they're going to say, okay, I'm going to make sure next time Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury's fighting, I'm going to go find that, and I'm going to see that dude fight again.
You got it. And I don't know why everybody doesn't think that way, but for whatever reason, boxing thinks that they only have, and I guess this is fairly accurate, they only have a finite number of fights they can put on each year that are going to attract any sort of attention. So maybe that's the thinking here. I don't like it. I think you should load it up.
Hey, speaking of attention and speaking of Mayweather-McGregor, don't know if you saw this yet or not, but McGregor could be seeing some attention from new sponsors. He can agree to a sponsorship deal with whoever he wants for this fight. He's not tied to Reebok like he is in his UFC deal. He's sort of a free agent for fight sponsorships leading into this fight. How big of a deal or deals do you think he can come up with?
He will have a huge deal on this. It'll be the most, you know, sponsorship money he's ever made, which isn't really saying anything because the UFC kind of changed the way they handled their business and handicapped him quite a bit as soon as he was getting going. But yeah, I think this will be, you know, it'll be a payday with two commas in it, which is something he's never gotten before.
I saw this about from Dave Meltzer. He alluded to and sort of referenced the possibility of a Roman Reigns Undertaker rematch at SummerSlam. He didn't say it was going to happen, but there was an allusion to this, a reference that there could be a possibility. Undertaker's done, right? He's not coming back for SummerSlam or anything, is he?
Undertaker's done. He had hip surgery in April. It's very unlikely that we're going to see him 4 months after having a hip replacement put in, work a patch. I get that, you know, sometimes in these creative meetings in WWE, people just say, hey, what about this? What if? And then somebody hears that and runs with it. But sometimes it's just a brainstorm. It's like, you know, once on this show, we said, hey, what if we had Arky do a bikini car wash? And then somebody said, hey, that's a terrible idea. So we're not doing that.
We might be able to make that happen, though, Arky. How much would it take for that to happen?
It's a terrible idea. This is like Undertaker wrestling at SummerSlam.
Hey, I thought it was pretty weird, too. I read an article in USA Today saying that most public bettors are placing their money on Conor McGregor in this fight.
I can't believe it, but I've seen the same thing, and I'm also seeing UFC fighters coming out in droves saying that they're betting on Conor McGregor. And I know that they probably have to say that, you know, and Dana may have even put down some sort of memo. You have to support Conor McGregor against the boxer. But this is just, you know, I mean, Vegas Runner had it right. This is as close to a sure thing in the history of professional betting. This is, I mean, I can't state this clearly enough. I want to bet Arky Shea's firstborn. This is a lock. Conor McGregor is losing a decision. That's the way this goes down. Or it gets disqualified along the way, but there's 0.0 chance that Conor gets his hand raised.
Now, I know it's a while back, and I'll forward this to you right now. Chris Van Heerden, you familiar with this guy?
No.
Okay, good, because neither am I. He is a South African boxer that I've never heard of, apparently sparred with McGregor 13 months ago. He came out and shared some of the video yesterday, and he's pounding Conor McGregor in the ring. Now, I don't know if he's supposed to share this video or if anyone knows that he has it, but
let me assure you, he's not supposed to share it, and they're going to find him and sue the hell out of him.
Yeah, because he was touching up McGregor pretty good, and it's just I realize that's not sort of the end-all, be-all of what's going to happen in this fight, what's it going to make. It's in your Twitter direct messages right now, but it's the more that I see about these boxers that are saying anything about McGregor or have been in the ring with him, it's not looking good for Conor McGregor to even really be effective against Floyd Mayweather.
Let me step out and say you can knock out Conor McGregor.
Let's turn the tables, though. And I've always told you that for $1 million, I would take a bare knuckle punch in the jaw from Floyd Mayweather, and I don't think it would knock me out. Do you think that would be much different from Conor McGregor?
I think Conor McGregor or Floyd Mayweather can knock you out. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that you could knock out Conor McGregor too.
Okay. I agree. I'd guess
those guys know where the button is. And, you know, there is the science of, hey, man, 25 pounds of pressure in this spot and everybody goes to sleep. That really does exist. And those guys have trained, well, one of them has, for a really long time at knowing exactly where that button is. And you may not even know, but he'll find it for you.
I know where the buttons are on my phone. It's 425-0105 if I want to save money. Tell our listeners why they should be smashing those buttons as well.
Man, because we're going to make life a little easier. And I think sometimes this gets lost on folks. But when we're helping you pay off other stuff, you don't make payments on that either. Here's what I mean. The Ligon family was able to pay off their first mortgage, their home equity line of credit, and their credit cards. They're going to save $750 a month. But the really fun thing for the summer, no payments for July or for August. Not on their house payment, not on their home equity line of credit, not on their credit card debt. They actually get to save all that cash for 2 months. They're actually going to use that money now to take the family on a summer vacation, and they're not putting it on a credit card. They're not financing it. And come September, they don't have a bigger monthly payment to deal with because they went on vacation. No, they're saving $750 a month. Stop overpaying your biggest debt. It's your mortgage. Get a better mortgage. Get a lower interest rate. Get a better tax deduction. And go ahead and get a hold of First Family Mortgage at 425-0105.
Great stuff, Conrad. Look forward to catching up tomorrow.
Thanks, man.
Conrad Thompson with First Family Mortgage joining us right there on the phones. If I took a bare-knuckle punch from Floyd Mayweather, is he knocking me out?
We're talking just
guy's 150 pounds.
Just one punch.
He's under 160.
I think he's going to fight at like 154 or 157 for this fight.
I'm 270 pounds.
One single punch.
Yes.
I'm just looking at your jaw right now. I'm just sort of trying to angle it up.
See, that's the thing, too. If he needed to get me in the temple or like the nose, I don't know if the angle that he could even reach to get me at there would be good enough.
So part one of the reasons I'm thinking, no, I don't. I mean, if you give him a couple punches, yeah, he finds your spot.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not.
But if it's just one punch, he just squares you up and looks at you. He's like, let me say right here. No,
And I'm not saying that he couldn't shake me.
I think you could handle it.
Right, I'm not saying it couldn't hurt. I'm saying knock me out.
Not that you wouldn't stagger or stumble or something, but like cold, unconscious.
Correct.
Yeah. I think you can handle one punch.
Like, are my eyes going to roll back into my head and I'm going to. Who is the dude? What was the team that was playing against Miami a few years ago? Was it Arkansas State where the guy crossed his arms and punted?
Was it App State or Arkansas State? It's one of the two.
I think it was Arkansas State. He crossed his arms and punt cover and fell backwards. Yeah. Like, am I going to be like that guy?
No.
See, I don't think so either.
I think
$1 million, I'd do it, though.
I think you could be a little like out on your feet, but I don't know if you'd get knocked out.
I might
out.
Be a little woozy. Yeah. It's going to shake me. I'm gonna have to dust the cobwebs off. But
make sure you get the get your wife to hand the check.
That I'm talking like
this has got the right number of zeros.
Knocking me out.
Yeah, no,
I just don't think it would.
I think you can handle one punch. Do you think it's different with Conor McGregor, though? Because he's a UFC, like, just pounder? I think it'd be similar. I think you can handle one punch.
I mean, he's the same size dude, so...
It's just weird, because, like, you see all these videos online of guys getting knocked out in one punch. You're like, whew, man, what...
But that's also another 150-pound guy.
No, I understand. I mean, a lot of times, these guys on the street.
But a lot of times in fighting, and even in street fighting, a lot of times you have weight distribution that's playing into that. So, if I'm trying to punch you, and I'm leaning into it, that's a big help. Like, I got knocked out one time sparring with our friend Brad Ginn. But, I mean, I was trying to throw a heavy right on him, and so I was basically, I mean, I had leaning half in. My body weight leaning into it, and he stuck me with a little uppercut, hit me in the chin, and I was down on the knee immediately. So, but if I'm just standing there, especially if I'm able to tense up a little bit, I just don't think it's possible.
Is there any chance we can make this happen, like in Vegas?
We can ask Vegas Runner Thursday.
If he can hook us up with that.
Well, what's Floyd got to lose by doing this?
Maybe $1 million. Who would pay the $1 million? It had to come from him.
The pay-per-view company?
Could we find a sponsor? Could Dreamland pay you the $1 million if he stood up to it?
Well, we could find sponsors for this, yeah. I mean, is it going to hurt him if he doesn't knock me out?
He doesn't knock anybody out anymore, so like, how'd it hurt him?
No, I mean, I agree. I think it's perfect. Maybe that'll be our cold question of the day. Let's get to 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
There's a lot going back and forth about the U.S. Open via Twitter over the weekend. Not sure if you saw Steve Elkington at Elk PGA. He doesn't hold back on Twitter.
Okay.
He tweeted Friday, Rory is so bored playing golf without Tiger, the threshold is probably four majors with $100 million in the bank. McIlroy responds at Elk PGA, more like $200 million, not bad for a bored 28-year-old. Plenty more where that came from. And Rory actually screenshotted his Wikipedia page.
What? Wow, he went
that
down.
That has all of his wins and achievements.
I like this new breed of athlete. The one not afraid to talk. Like LeBron James getting loose on Twitter. Sort of sub-tweeting Dan Gilbert. Rory not afraid to bounce back at people, to clap back and say, hey, check out all these wins that you apparently weren't accounting for because I cash checks for them.
Now, Steve Elkington did respond to that. At Elk PGA tweeted, knew you were a money guy, N-E-W. Jack won 18 and never mentioned his total cash. It was $5 million.
Yeah, we're
different, okay. Different day and age. A little different. Overall,
I just like the assumption that he's just so bored with winning.
Jack also didn't have
Elkington. There's no Tiger. I'm bored.
Jack also didn't have Steve Elkington tweeting at him about how bored he was, or about how much he was making.
Did Jack have Tiger?
I don't know. No. Mike Tyson owned a Tiger one time.
Oh, okay. Is that my bad? Then yeah, we're the same.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Booger McFarland of the SEC Network will join us. One tweet to get to. Chris Crow, at CLC Crow 1876 tweets. At Cube Show, Mayweather couldn't knock out at Cole Kublik. Hashtag early AM tough. Does time of the day impact this, you think?
When are you most likely to fall asleep?
6:30 p.m.
Okay, so make it like...
Before Wheel of Fortune's over?
Like 9:30? Like right before the show when you're like it's jazz. You're gonna get?
Probably. All right, let's get to a break. We'll ask Boog this question when we come back.
White man came across the sea. He brought us pain.
This is our bumper music for Booger McFarland for the SEC Network.
I think he's hip to it.
Booger McFarland joins us now of the SEC Network at SEC Booger via Twitter. Boog, good morning, man. What's up?
What's up, Cole? What's going on, buddy?
Here's our cold question of the day. First off, before that, your thoughts on Mayweather-McGregor?
It'll be more entertainment than athletic competition. And I think in the grand scheme of things, but we're looking for entertainment. I think a lot of people are going to watch. And even though we all know the outcome is probably going to be a Mayweather victory, the reason we watch sports is because of the what if. What if something magical happens? What if something that we've never seen before happens? And I think that's why we'll watch.
So, are you in, though? I mean, is it something that you're interested in watching? Will you make sure that you get to see it?
Oh, I'm definitely going to watch. I may not pay for it, but I'm going to watch.
All right, so our cold question of the day. Now, I want you to think about this before you answer quickly, because you're known to sort of jump to conclusions on some of these answers on things I give you every now and then. Could Floyd Mayweather knock out Cole Kublik with one free bare knuckle punch to the face?
Yes. Because I think Floyd has enough power and knows where to hit you. And really not even Floyd, but I mean, Arky could do the same thing. So it wouldn't even have to be Floyd. Arky could do, if you gave him a bare knuckle punch and he hit you right in the temple in the right spot. I mean, it's Katie bar the door and good night, buddy.
See, but this is part of my argument is, could Floyd even reach my temple at the right angle to generate that kind of power?
That's a good question. Floyd's about 5'7", 5'8". You're a legit, what, 6'3"?
Correct.
I mean, that's an interesting question. But I tell you what, even if he couldn't reach your temple, I know another place he could hit you in one punch and knock you out that he could reach.
But we said in the face, so it's
nah, but well, I mean, listen, if you're going to put stipulations on it, then I'm pretty sure that the guy's probably going to need a ladder to reach you. I mean, you're 6'3", but if you made the statement that he could hit you anywhere, I definitely would take Floyd in this bet.
No, the cold question of the day is one bare knuckle punch to the face.
That's not really a good question. Whoever came up with that question, I would really love to question their job security at the moment.
Well, it's mine, so I think I'm safe. Presented by Dreamland Barbecue. Go to dreamlandbbq.com. We know you're an avid golfer. We know you watch golf. You spent Father's Day watching the U.S. Open. Before we just talk about Brooks Koepka and the win, what do you make of this young guard that seems to be sort of taking over golf? It feels like we've sort of turned the page with Phil having to bail out for his daughter's graduation, Tiger continuing to go through some of the struggles that he has. I mean, we saw the best round in U.S. Open history by Justin Thomas on Saturday, and then, of course, Brooks Koepka comes in and gets the win on Sunday. Do you feel that this group can sustain the popularity of golf that we've seen in the last 5-6 years? Even when Tiger sort of went away, there were some guys like Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy that appeared as though they could sort of keep golf afloat from a popularity standpoint. Are you confident that this next wave can do the same?
No, because although they are great players, none of them are stars. And I think when you go back to the era of Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods was a star call. He was a star. He may be, at worst, the second greatest player of all time. And then you throw in, he had some rivals. He had Phil Mickelson. He had Ernie Els. He had Vijay Singh. So if you think about the cartoon era, you always have a superhero and then you have the villain. Well, Tiger Woods was the superhero. And then you had all the guys around him that were chasing. They kind of gave that rivalry type deal. Right now, as good a player as we have with Dustin and Rory and Jordan Spieth, none of them are stars on the level that Tiger Woods was ever. And I give no other stat than this one. Tiger Woods only missed, I want to say, like 17 or 18 cuts in his career. I think Jordan Spieth has already missed that many, and he's only 24. So when you think about the people that we're comparing to Tiger Woods, none of them are even close to the same or in the same realm. And so I think while golf is in a good spot, golf will never be what it was. Just go back and look at the ratings of the U.S. Open. I think they were the second lowest ratings they've had in the last 10 or 15 years. Now, you imagine Tiger Woods in Wisconsin going for major number 15. You think a lot of people wouldn't have tuned in? And I think that speaks to the star power that golf is lacking right now.
Does it hurt at all that these guys are all such good friends? I mean, Justin Thomas and Koepka and Dustin Johnson and all these guys, Spieth and Fowler, they all hang out and vacation together and spend time together and go on double dates and all that deal. Does that hurt this at all?
No, I don't think so. I think we, you know, obviously, you know, we want a rivalry. We want people that really don't like each other. But if you don't get that, as long as you get superior competition, as long as you get their performance and they compete at the highest level, it really doesn't matter if they're friends or not. I mean, if you think about it, in the National Football League, how many times did we see Peyton Manning go against Tom Brady? They were some of the best friends off the field. They always were very complimentary of each other. They may not have hung out as much, but they were very good friends. So as long as the competitive level is at a high, I don't think it really matters.
Speaking of competitive level, I think a lot of people, Booger McFarland of the SEC Network joining us now, a lot of people are concerned that the level of competitive basketball, especially in the regular season in the NBA, just about what that will be in the next few years. We talked about this in the opening segment with Durant basically saying that he's going to opt out of making $28 million next year, and a lot of people are reporting that that's to take less to help re-sign Iguodala, and of course Steph Curry is going to be due a ton of money, well-deserved, because he's been underpaid the last few years. But the desperation that it seems is floating around teams like Cleveland when you see that, oh, they're making a run at Jimmy Butler. Oh, they're going to try and go nab Paul George. There doesn't seem to be much team building anymore, as in we're going to work through the draft. We're going to add a free agent that can help us in a certain area. and then just try and build a team instead of just throwing these all-star teams together? Is the competitive balance of the NBA outside of Golden State, should that be a concern for Adam Silver the next few years?
No, I don't think so, because I think if you look at the finals, they were, I think, the highest-rated finals since the 80s. So people are watching, even though we all thought we knew the outcome, even though we all knew these two teams were going to be there, people still watch. I think the issue is for the regional networks. Think about like a Fox Sports South who has a regional game with the Pelicans and someone else. Now, those regional networks are going to be hurt. But, you know, TNT, ESPN, ABC, like they're always going to get the cream of the crop. And so people are going to watch those games. And, you know, more importantly, like I feel for the fans, because if you're a fan and you have season tickets for your team, out of those 41 games that your team is playing, you're probably only looking forward to watching probably four or five. And so I think the season ticket market will probably get hurt. But from a viewership standpoint, Cole, these finals were some of the most recent watched finals in recent history.
No, I think the highest since Jordan and the Jazz, 98. So impressive. We'll see if that can continue to roll and continue to be there. We talked about the SEC East yesterday. Do you have a team that you feel is a clear front runner in the SEC East right now?
No, I think the closer we get, and now that we're done with spring practice and we're midsummer and we're rolling, I could make a case for probably four teams winning the East. You know, one of those teams would probably be a sleeper in Kentucky because they got a lot coming back. The key will be, can Stoops get that defense to finally play up to a level in which he his expertise coaches at on defense? I think, you know, Georgia, with everything that they have coming back from a skill position standpoint, the big question is still going to be the offensive line. We know they should be able to run the football. They should have a capable quarterback, whether it's Easton or Fromm. Either way, is the offensive line going to block anyone, and can they have a receiver that can catch a ball? Florida, all they've done is won the East 2 years in a row when they probably weren't the most talented team in the East 2 years in a row. So, until somebody beats Florida, if I had to bet some money, I'd probably put a couple of quarters on Florida. And then I think another sleeper team may be South Carolina, just because of the gunslinger mentality of Bentley and what people think about him. And Will Muschamp, he's overachieved so far, at least in year one. So I think you can make a case for any of those four teams. I don't think Tennessee has a chance. I think Tennessee, Missouri, Vanderbilt are probably not going to be in the mix in the East.
I want to go back to the NBA quickly. You spent time in professional locker rooms, and you played with some of the greatest players in your sport at the time that you were playing. What does it do to the rest of the roster that LeBron most likely, I mean, we don't know this for certain, but most likely has as much say about that roster as he does? Is it just an understanding of this is the greatest player on the planet, he should be able to call some of the shots? Or is it frustrating for guys like Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving that there's not a true front office doing the things that they should be paid to do to help build a championship team?
Sometimes in life, Cole, you recognize greatness. And when you recognize it, you just bow down to it. And Kevin Love and Kyrie are all-stars. They're great players. They're not LeBron James. LeBron James is a top three player of all time. He's the best player in the NBA right now. So I don't think there's frustration. And the only reason there's not is because you know LeBron James is going to show up. He just averaged a triple-double in the finals. No other player in the history of the NBA has ever done that. So I think LeBron, his reputation, his game speaks for itself. It would be different if the guy who had all the clout was a guy that didn't perform and a guy that you couldn't count on. LeBron James is a guy who basically carried your team to a championship 2 years ago. He had your team in the finals 3 years ago and took the Golden State Warriors to six. And, you know, he just basically won a game in game four by itself this year in the finals. So his reputation, his work on the court speaks for itself. And if you're Kyrie Irving and you're Kevin Love, you just say, okay, how can we help?
Boy, great stuff as always, man. Looking forward to catching up at SEC Media Days.
Anytime. Make sure the golf game is ready, Cole. I don't want any excuses this time. I want to make sure that you've been practicing. I want to make sure that you got enough golf balls, you got enough golf shoes. I don't want any excuses. Arky, if you're listening, make sure Cole goes to the range and practices, because I don't want any excuses.
I got you, Boog.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, Boog, we'll take care. We'll talk to you soon. I do need to get out there and practice, because we're going to be playing that Sunday before, and I have not been out recently. So, 2 week old will do that today. That's, by the way, 2 weeks today. So,
how many weeks are we going to do this in a row?
All the weeks.
11 weeks old today.
Let's get to a break. Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com will join us next to discuss Neyland Stadium and some possible improvements right after this. GameCube Show, Sports Radio 730. 103.9 The Ump. Let's go to Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. He joins us each and every Tuesday at this time. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Cole.
It's good to have you on again. I saw Neyland Stadium set to, I don't know, potentially get some upgrades. Apparently, the athletic director saying that the in-stadium fan experience needs to be improved. What exactly is on tap?
Well, you know, it's like with the HD television screens, and you want to keep that fan experience as positive as possible when you're looking for donations travel across the state, as they do in Tennessee, to come to these games. You want to make sure that your concourses are clean, your bathrooms are updated, and that the stadium has a great aesthetics. You know, Neyland Stadium, I think, Cole, is one of the country. I mean, I think there's a lot of great stadiums. Of course, I covered Auburn, and so I guess I'm a little partial to Jordan here. I think that's a great stadium as well. And I know Bryant Denny's been expanded, and it's been since I covered the Tide. But, you know, Neyland Stadium is just a little bit more vertical, and I think it has a little bit maybe better setting. Tennessee wants to capitalize on Neyland Stadium more in recruiting.
And we're visiting with Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. John Curry saying it's not sufficient, so obviously some of those upgrades going to need to take place. And I know structurally there are some improvements that need to be made also. Is there any update on things of that nature that could be taking place soon?
Well, I think they're talking about the backside of it that's up against the river, and just make that a little bit more aesthetically pleasing to the eye, and again add maybe some more restrooms on the stadium as well. I'd ask you, Cole. I mean, you played at Neyland Stadium. What were your thoughts playing there, and just the way that stadium was compared with others in the SEC?
It was incredible. I've been to games there as a recruit. I've been as a broadcaster, and I've played there, and I agree with you, just how steep that stadium is makes it very different, and obviously I think that's one thing that makes it louder and changes the noise levels, but it can also make it more intimidating, I think, just because there you don't really see anything else like it as far as other stadiums around the league and around the nation, so... But I do, pulling up there last year was the first time I had been in a while, and you could see some of the exterior that obviously needed to be upgraded and needed some improvement. So I guess I'm not really surprised by this. And I think it's always good, too, for the fan experience, Mike, because you and I have talked about just how watching games at home can be so much better and so much easier for fans these days. I think you have to do things inside the stadium to attract people to come to games. Now, not to every game. People are going to go to Tennessee, Florida, no matter what. People are going to Tennessee, Georgia, no matter what. But Tennessee, Kentucky, or Tennessee, UMass, or teams like that, Tennessee, App State, if it's not the season opener at home, you need some things inside the stadium to get people excited about and make sure that it's going to be enjoyable.
Right. Or, you know, if you're going to, you know, charge those prices, you know, for season tickets or, you know, per game even, you've got to justify that cost. I mean, one thing about, you know, the NFL games, and, you know, my goodness,
talk about exorbitant costs. NFL games are incredibly expensive. I mean, you spend your whole Christmas budget going to one NFL game, but they are newer stadiums for the most part. And, you know, they have all the stuff, I guess, between plays and timeouts and the noise level. And, you know, some people like the alcohol served at the games. I guess it just depends on whether you're bringing a family or a loved one or whether you want to go yourself and get wild, what kind of environment you want to be in. But the college game's a little bit different. I think it is a little bit more family-oriented. I think it's meant to be a more friendly environment. You know, we talk about intimidating, and, you know, fans can make a lot of noise and boos, but beyond that, you know, you want to feel like, you know, you're in a good atmosphere at a college football game, and I think you want to attract that type of crowd. And if you want to attract that type of crowd, Cole, then you've got to provide some services to make them feel good about bringing their family to a game or bringing their kids or their wives. And, you know, you hear the tales about, you know, people having to stand in line to go to the bathroom for so long. That can't happen. If you want to continue to bring folks out, eventually they're going to, like you said, say, you know what, let's invest in a, you know, $800 television set and enjoy this from home every Saturday.
We're visiting with Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. Stephen Griffin has been added to the NC State roster. He's a Tennessee transfer. He'll have to sit out this season. Is he someone you expect to make a pretty big impact at NC State? How big of a loss was he, the son of former Falcons running back Steve Griffin?
Yeah, you know, he was a nice player. I mean, he wasn't good enough to start at Tennessee, and you know, but I thought he was a decent player. I think he started against Kentucky at the end of the year after they'd lost a couple guys to injuries, and you know, really just a guy that maybe couldn't do everything Tennessee wanted the safety to do. You know, the safety position has become one of the most difficult. It was already hard to be that last line of defense, Cole, but now you're asking that safety to come up and line up essentially as an extra linebacker and be willing and able to cover a 265-pound tight end or 185-pound back. Or in some cases, Calvin Ridley lined up in the slot. And when that quarterback runs, when that quarterback turns, you don't know if it's a handoff and you have to attack the ball or if you have to be ready to pivot and run with a guy like Ridley. I mean, you talk about a tough position. So when I say that maybe he wasn't able to do the things that Tennessee wanted to do at that position, there's not many people that are. And you could argue that Tennessee didn't have anybody that did a very good job with that last year when you take a look at how many yards they gave up. But I think Steven wanted to be in a position where he would play a lot more. I think Nigel Warrior is a guy that Tennessee recruited, a true freshman out of Georgia that I think might have passed Steven on the depth chart. And when you get, you know, passed for maybe that number two job by a freshman, that's probably a pretty good sign that maybe you're not going to start any more games in your career and you might be limited to special teams. So I don't think anybody felt bad about it. I don't think anybody's angry. I think it's a deal where Tennessee hopes that Steven, you know, does well at his next stop. I think he has the potential to grow some. I just think it would have been difficult with some of the types of players Tennessee's brought in for him to get the playing time that he wanted.
I would agree. Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. What new additions, be it transfer or, I guess, freshman, to this Tennessee roster do you expect to make big impact this fall?
Well, you know, Trey Smith. I mean, we talked about it. You know, he was a midterm enrollee. And I know we talked about it. Maybe he's not technically a new addition because he was here for spring drills and you saw him. But I said on your show last week, I don't mean to be repetitive, but I don't think I've seen a freshman come in like this on the offensive line since Willie Anderson at Auburn in 93. I mean, this guy, Trey Smith, is a beast. And, you know, I know you hear it every week. You really do. And there's all sorts of guys that are talking about freshmen, but just trust me on this one. When people see this guy, they're not going to believe he's a freshman. I mean, he just turned 18, and he looks like he's about 28. I mean, he's an absolute beast. He's probably the most athletic and dynamic offensive lineman Tennessee has. And that's saying a lot. Tennessee's got 111 offensive line starts coming back and seven guys with starting experience. Now, Trey's got a lot to learn, Cole. You know that. You can be the most athletic guy in the world, but if you don't know where to step and if it's not instinctual, you can get beat in a hurry in the SEC. So I'm not saying I think he's going to necessarily dominate his first year. This is a guy, though, that barring injury, you're going to hear about in the NFL. It could be a first-round draft pick, again, barring injury after only 3 years. So I'd say Trey Smith, and then Ty Chandler is the running back that they want to have an impact. You know, they only have two scholarship backs coming back. So Ty Chandler was the number 5 rated tailback in the nation. He's a track guy. He's a fast guy. He's got big, strong legs, not a very big upper body, not a whole lot of target there. He's mostly legs and power. And if he can get over this pulled hamstring he's been dealing with, he's a guy that you could see play in the opener right away.
Do they need other carries at running back, in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. I think more so now than ever, especially when you look at offenses that are running 80 and 90 plays. I mean, you know, you're asking your back to, you know, carry it. Well, how many carries do you have a game? You know, you got, what, 30 or 33 carries a game, and maybe you throw to your back, you know, 5 or 6 times. It's 38 touches. And, you know, I don't think anybody could sustain that level in today's game. I think the days of the you know, one back, you know, carrying the load are few and far between. I mean, you saw Fournette couldn't even make it through the year. You know, and he, as much of a beast as he was, and how quickly did he get worn down? And, you know, there's all sorts of questions about his future now, and he looked like a guy for a while there that was, you know, the next, you know, Herschel or whatever. And then all of a sudden he wasn't. Look at Alabama. You know, they tried to manage their big back, and he couldn't make it through the national title game. Probably cost him the national championship. If he stays healthy, I think Alabama wins that game, Cole. So, yeah, to the point, absolutely. I think you got to have 2 or 3 backs nowadays, and I think you got to spread those carries if you want those big backs to get through the season.
Mike, our cold question of the day is, do you think Floyd Mayweather, with one bare-knuckle punch to my face, could knock me out? Yes or no?
Yeah, but here's the trick. I actually covered boxing, and I talked to some fighters about, you know, I was younger back then. I asked them, where do you hit somebody if you want to knock them out? And if somebody hits you, I probably shouldn't share this on the air. I'm just going to say that if they hit you in the right place, that they can knock anybody out. If you're a standstill target, then any boxer who knows what they can do can knock you out.
Wow. All right, there you go. Good stuff from Mike Griffith. What was the most exciting fight you covered?
I covered the down in Kronk Gym. There was a fighter by the name of Fabian Williams, and Mayweather, his dad actually fought a guy by the name of Roger Turner down there, and Roger was the welterweight champ of the world, and Jackie Kalin was the manager for Mayweather's dad. So that was a pretty interesting fight way back. It was like in the late 1980s. But going down there to the Palace of Auburn Hills, the Kronk Gym. They'd put a lineup out there. Michael Moore was one of their fighters as well, and seeing Emmanuel Stewart in the corner, and then Turner was a fighter out of mid-Michigan that was on the card and fought the Jackie Kalin fighter. So probably that welterweight fight between Mayweather and Turner, and again, I never went out to Vegas for those fights, but with Kronk Gym in Detroit, there was some. You met some really interesting guys, and the way they trained was pretty hardcore.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate the time, and look forward to doing it again next week.
All right, Cole. Have a good one.
So that's Booger McFarland and Mike Griffith both think that Floyd knocks me out. One bare-knuckle punch to the face.
Listen, I get that there's a special place to hit Cole Kublik in the face. Trust me, I've been researching it. but I don't... Floyd Mayweather's a tiny dude. Like, you got to get the reach to get up to that spot and to be able to hit that pressure. I think Cole could withstand one good blow.
All right, we'll continue that conversation next hour. Also, we will rank coaches at 8:20 as if they were recruits. And Bill Bender talks toughest college football games this season at 8:40. Gerard Powers in the 9 o'clock hour.